You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to help you plan that unbelievable travel experience. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prop G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special three-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the Future of Entrepreneurship, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prop G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
That's right. MMA is upon us. A weekend full of it. And tomorrow night, UFC back in action at the empty Apex. Well, empty-ish Apex. There's a handful of people there. UFC Vegas 31 main event in the lightweight division. Islam Makhachev taking on Thiago Moises. And according to Las Vegas and the betting lines, not a lot of hope for one Thiago Moises tomorrow night. But also, another big storyline going down in the co-main event, the return after a nearly five-year layoff of one Miesha Tate, the former women's bantamweight champion, as she will take on Marion Renault in what will be Renault's final fight of her mixed martial arts careers. We're here to talk about this card, UFC Vegas 31, going down tomorrow with all of you. To welcome you to our preview show, I am Mike Heck, being joined by the entire crew here. We got Jose Youngs in Arizona. Big game five coming up very soon for the Phoenix Suns against the Milwaukee Bucks. We got Alex K. Lee, who had it, unfortunately.
Are we talking about MMA last week? Didn't we talk about MMA last week? We're talking about MMA again already. that kills the parties, guys. That normally kills the parties. Sorry. Well, you know, I'm workshopping it. Just workshopping my MMA joke material.
Thanks.
Next time.
Nice try, Joey Gladstone. And then we got E. Casey Lydon joining us on the ones and twos. How are you, my friend?
Doing fantastic, sir. Happy to be
no
here.
Dad joke. No dad joke to kick us off.
No, I'm here to talk business. MMA, mixing the martial arts. That's what we're here for.
Yeah, I was going to start off with the joke about the jump rope, but I thought I'd skip it. Hey-o. All right, let's. That's right. So Islam Makhachev versus Thiago Moises, of course. The lightweight division was at the top of the marquee this past weekend, UFC 264. Dustin Poirier defeats Conor McGregor. We're not here to talk about that. But in a way, this card kind of gets buried due to the hangover and the aftermath of UFC 264 and everything that has come out of it and continues to come out of it. Do you kind of feel that yourself, Jose? I mean, sometimes these hangovers post-pay-per-view are real, but I feel like this one's lasting quite a bit longer than some of the other ones we talked about. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, but it's just how it goes with any Conor McGregor fight card. Like, do you remember the card after UFC 229?
What was that? Which one was that?
That was Anthony Smith, Volkan Ozdemir up in, what, Moncton? And Artem Lobov was going to fight Khabib's teammate on that card. Before that all fell out. So it's just the same thing. They have like an interesting main event with some interesting fights. They just get lost in the shuffle with a massive Conor McGregor card the week before. Like it's just par for the course right now. Like I don't know many people that remember UFC 203 or what, UFC 206. Like it just happens. And those are pay-per-view cards after. So it's the usual. I'm not surprised, as one Mr. Nathan Diaz once said.
Okay, as you know, this event kind of snake bitten in a way. I mean, we still have an interesting main event, but we were supposed to get Max Holloway versus Yair Rodriguez tomorrow. Ooh. So I don't feel like the hangover would be as bad with that fight at the top of the bill as opposed to this fight, which is a fine fight. But I don't know, like we haven't talked about your rating scale, your gymnastic scale, so to speak, for a while. Like, what's the best this card can do with what we have right now and no Holloway versus Rodriguez?
Mike, there's a reason we haven't used the gymnastic scale in a while. It doesn't work. It doesn't work for MMA cards, I realize. But since you asked if we must do this, if we must entertain this exercise, I mean, I think this card, taking it all in its entirety, not just the main card, I think this card could be like an 8.5. Wow. I think this has a degree of difficulty. All right, listen, there's three bantamweight fights in this card. Bantamweights rule. We know this. I think Khalid Taha and Miles Johns and Anderson Dos Santos, those are both good fights. I see a lot of good lighter weight stuff on the prelims. I know we're going to dig deeper. Yeah, but I'm just looking at the prelims. I think a lot of underappreciated lighter weight action. And I'm intrigued by the top two fights in this card. I'm intrigued by actually quite a few fights in this main card. So I'm going, again, this is everything. We're talking like you get good back and forth fights. You get some exciting knockouts. You get a cool submission. You get some, you know, some drama. That's if everything culminates. I think this card could be an 8.5.
How do you like this card, EKC? What do you think? Like, how would you gauge your excitement level for this card? Like, there are some very interesting fights, but this is kind of like a card Jose talks about from time to time where it's like, it's a lot, there's a lot of storylines surrounding certain fighters and, you know, their apparent road to get to that next step. And we talked about that in Between the Links yesterday, but there are some like pretty compelling, interesting matchups, especially on the prelims. Where would you gauge your excitement level for this particular card tomorrow night?
Solid 5. It's, there's no, There's fighters I'm interested in seeing. There's no actual matchups. I'm like, that's the matchup that needs to fight. That needs to happen right now. I mean, I'm excited to see Gamera. I'm excited to see Misha Tate's return. I'm excited to see how good Makhachev is or can be. Actually, the Daniel Rodriguez is always exciting to watch. Amanda Lemos. Lemos, is that how you say it? Is that what we're saying?
Lemos, yeah.
Lemos, yeah. She's looked spectacular at strawweight, so I'm kind of bummed out that's so buried on the undercard against a very exciting Montserrat Conejo. So, but as far as matchups, I mean, it's a card. I'm watching it. I would, even if I wasn't working, I would be at home excited to watch the fights. But I mean, it's a fight night card. That's all. I mean, I don't think we have to oversell it. I think I don't know. I'm not trying to crap on the card or anything. I'm just like, it's their fight.
Are you sure?
It's missing a main event. That's all. It's just missing a main event. If it had Holloway Yair, you know, something that's really got like serious title implications, heck yeah. But no, it's just missing a main event. That's not the UFC's fault. It happens. But that's why, you know, they have a loaded roster. So the rest of the card is decent.
So let's talk about this main event, Jose, because right now our good friends at DK Nation have Islam Makhachev as a -720 favorite, and the comeback on Thiago Moises is +500. Now, Islam is obviously a protege of Khabib Nurmagomedov. A lot of people feel like he's sort of the second coming of Khabib, and he could be right in the title hunt, title picture, with the title around his waist very soon with the way that he's been performing in there. And pretty much this entire fight's been put together from, you know, a lot of people that I've spoken with and a lot of reports out there. No one wants to fight Islam Makhachev. Nobody wants to fight this guy in the top 15 or the top 10, and understandably so, because the risk reward factor isn't quite there. But Thiago Moises is like, you know what? I've been the underdog for so many of these different fights. Fights Michael Johnson, fights Bobby Green, fights Alexander Hernandez, and he's kind of the overlooked guy. What do you think of this matchup in particular? And Thiago Moises saying, you know what? Give me a pen. I'm signing.
I mean, it's what I said a while ago. Like, you have these fighters that will do the UFC's favors, and then it will work out for them in the long run. I think it's both of these fighters. Like, Islam clearly wanted to fight. The UFC wanted him to fight. Thiago Moises wanted to fight. So they just found two lightweights that are in the top 15 that just want to fight, and they did. I mean, Khabib did it himself. Like, what? Khabib fought Michael Johnson when he had already, like, got offered a contract to fight for the title, and then they pulled it. He just goes, F it, I'll fight Michael Johnson. And then he gets hurt, and he comes back and fight Edson Barboza, like the RDA, the Pat Healy fights. What did he fight, like, forget his first name, Horcher, like on that Florida card he stayed
Darryl
on.
Horcher, the yeah.
Fight. Yeah, there you go. So it's just like Habib did the same thing. It doesn't surprise me that Islam is going to do it. And from everything I've heard from just being around that team for like all these various fight nights, a lot of people think Islam has a higher ceiling than Habib because he hasn't been overly injured. Yes, he's lost a lot of fights and people haven't wanted to fight him, but people think Islam could be a better all-around mixed martial artist than who many people consider to be the greatest lightweight, if not one of the top five greatest fighters in the history of the sport. So as Casey and I have said a million times, anytime the best fight or there's any sort of inkling of they might be the best, I'm very excited. So this whole there's no main event, it's the Islam Makhachev show. And if he truly is the best lightweight, I want to watch him fight. And a lot of people think that it's only a matter of time. Like whoever's the champion right now or moving forward is just keeping the seat warm for Mr. Islam Makhachev. So if that's the case, I'm very excited for this fight. He has not, he's lost yet. He's had a stumbling block. So he doesn't have that O on his record. So, but I can't wait. I am very, very excited for this main event. Yeah. And who's Thiago lost to? Like Beneil Dariush and then,
Ismagulov.
The individual who lost. Yeah. And isn't he on like a 16 fight win streak? Or something crazy like that. Like this, Thiago Moises is the only two losses that Thiago Moises has in the UFC are to Beneil Dariush, who a lot of people are also saying is like a win away from the lightweight title fight, and just beat Tony Ferguson pretty handedly, who was supposed to fight for the title. And then the other guy hasn't lost in what, like 5-6 years? And then he has so like Thiago Moises is really good. Like he could be a top 10, maybe just hasn't had the matchups either. So I'm super excited for this fight. And would I be more excited for Max Holloway, Yair Rodriguez? 1,000%. But if you put Islam Makhachev and Thiago Moises in the octagon for 5 rounds, 25 minutes, I'm going to sit at the edge of my seat the whole time. So 10 out of 10 main event for me.
Yeah, his other loss in his career, 10. Robert Whoa. Watley yeah. at LFA.
100%, man. I love this. If this was a fight... If this was a fight, it would be like, you know how like I always say, like, this is just a really high level martial arts competition. Like, I don't care if this is for the title, if this is the main event, this is whatever. That's this for me. I don't care if this is the first fight of the night or the last fight of the night, or it's a gym, or if they're training in the gym. I want to watch Islam Makhachev fight Thiago Moises to see how good both men are.
Yeah, I think it's kind of... Listen, it's not Holloway Yair, and it's unfair to compare the two fights, but this is an intriguing matchup. Like Thiago Moises has done a lot of good things. He looks really good on the feet. I really like his boxing. I really like the way he approaches the striking game. He's made a lot of adjustments, a lot of changes. And one thing that is overlooked about Thiago Moises, his striking defense is unbelievable. Like go back and watch that Alexander Hernandez fight. And I know there are people out there who thought that Hernandez won that fight. Thiago, man.
And he's
good at dodging punches, man. Like he Hernandez missed like 80% of the punches that people thought he actually landed.
And I do want to add, wasn't when he fought Beneil Dariush, wasn't that like a last minute fight? Wasn't that like his first UFC fight, at least first or second one? So it's because I remember Beneil like dominated him. And then after the fight, he was like, he just wasn't ready because Beneil just wanted to stay on the card. And maybe he's ready now, but yeah, good fight. I like the fight.
Are you AK? Are you surprised that the line is this heavy? Makhachev has that allure to him. He's really good. I just feel like nearly an 8-1 favor right now. Just I don't know. I'm kind of surprised it's that high. Like if it was 5-1, it wouldn't surprise me. But 720 going up, continuing to rise. That's a little surprising to me.
I don't agree with it, but it doesn't surprise me. Again, if we're talking about how the oddsmakers should be thinking, once people hear, you know, who might, even people who aren't familiar with Makhachev, now that he's being built up, I mean, he has been being built up as a while, but you know, it's a fight week, so it's coming up again. The next Khabib talk, you know, he's that guy who's going to fill that space. How can the oddsmakers, you know, you can't make the odds heavy enough in that case. And Thiago Moises, as Jose's kind of said, is relatively unknown. He's a tough guy. Who's known again for those of us who keep up with it. But as far as casual betting goes, they don't know who Thiago Moises is. He didn't. The other thing I want to focus on here, guys, is this is exciting because this is a situation where we have in the MMA fighting global rankings, the only rankings that matter, we have Islam Makhachev higher than the UFC does. So Islam Makhachev is number 9 in the quote unquote official UFC rankings, whatever that means, and number 7 in the real rankings, in our rankings. So so we'll see. I think we're ahead of the game here. This is one of the reasons, you know, for anyone who doesn't know, we just recently made our own rankings. Go to MMAfighting.com. There's a nice little button at the top you can find to check them out. And we wanted to differentiate ourselves from official rankings from the UFC, from Bellator, and whoever else has official rankings. So this is the number. So this is to Jose's point. This is officially the number 7 lightweight in the world fight.
What do we have Moises at?
He is not ranked. However, in my own rankings, in my own rankings, I would have him 17th. I would have him in the top 20. I don't know if you guys disagree, but I would have him in the top 20.
He's top 20 in mine too.
So number 7 versus sure. the top 20 guy.
Top 20, yeah. Right. 20-ish. Yeah.
In the real
world. Pretty good. Like
as Casey Ladin once said, sometimes you need showcase fights.
And that's what I think this is. And I love showcase fights. I'm all about showcase fights.
I'm just saying,
you don't got to cancel your dinner plans to watch a showcase fight. That's all.
Well said. Anybody picking Thiago Moises to pull off this upset before we move on to the co-main event?
No, but I think it's definitely closer than those massive odds you just laid out.
I think the odds are accurate.
I think a submission is very possible. Moises is so good. It's so good on the ground. So much fun to watch too. But I mean, yeah, I'm all on the Makhachev hype train, so I'm not going to go against it.
Yeah, I think, and Moises clearly has the striking advantage in this fight too. He's just so defensively sound and good at avoiding. I just don't know what his takedown defense. We haven't seen enough of a sample size because, I mean, clearly he wants to keep this thing on the feet. He is dangerous on the ground too, but you do not want that man on top, Islam Makhachev, on top of you for what could be 25 minutes. That's a long damn night. Go ahead, Jose.
I don't know if he'll steamroll over him, but I'm excited to see him face another guy that can actually mix it up. Because like, who's his last two fights? Dober and Hamos. Davi Hamos is not known for his striking, obviously, and Drew Dober is not known for his wrestling, obviously. And I think Thiago, would I favor Dober against Moises? Maybe, but I just think Moises mixes it together a lot more than Hamos and Dober. And like, who's his win before that? Sarukian. Like, we're still comparing Sarukian based on his loss to Islam, because it was a really good fight in his first ever UFC fight. People are saying, look at Armin Sarukian, like, did that well against Islam. How good is he? And like, he hasn't lost since. So yeah, I'm very excited to watch Islam Makhachev fight and Thiago Moises.
I'm excited to watch Islam Makhachev fight.
Yeah, you are very, very high on Islam, as is everybody, but you are.
Everyone is.
There was a moment when Islam, I think he fought it. I think it was in Cleveland. Oh, I'm not sure. It was where was it? Boston. It was in Boston. He won in Boston.
220.
Yeah, I remember he dominated. I remember him doing his post-fight scrum, and I was with Ariel Helwani, and I remember telling him, "Go, that must be the hardest man to book for Sean Shelby, because there is no reason, because he is clearly to me top." I thought he was top 5 talent, but probably top 10. Being generous, he was already top 10 talent. And he wasn't anywhere near the top 10 in actual rankings. And like, I just thought he was going to be impossible to book. So unless the UFC can really kind of basically connect him to Khabib. So by basically, if you beat Islam, you're basically beating Khabib. Otherwise, he's going to get matchups like this. Cause I just don't see anyone above him in the rankings accepting a fight with him.
That's why I was really disappointed when Kevin Lee hopped up. Yeah. Cause Kevin Lee wanted to fight Islam in Moscow. And no one wanted to fight Islam, and no one wanted to go to Moscow. And Kevin Lee wanted to do both for that main event. And unfortunately, it just didn't work out for fight fans. Who did he beat in Boston? Didn't he knock out Gleison Tibo?
In like 90 seconds or something.
It was a minute. It was a minute.
Yeah. And this is going to be the problem for Makhachev too. If I think what he does what he I think he'll do, and he was going to steamroll in this fight, he's still going to be ranked number 7 or whatever he is in the UFC rankings. Like, there's no reason for us to bump him higher. So his next fight, he might be in the same situation again. You know, he'll face Bobby Green. I don't know. But we're just – until he gets upset by a lower-ranked guy or someone just takes that risk and faces him, Makhachev might have – he's going to have a problem against that eventual title shot.
I still want the RDA fight.
I can tell you though, in our rankings, some people I believe he was as high as, if I'm remembering, I think someone had him as high as 3.
I would. I could. Maybe I would top, not. I could.
Maybe I would top put 5. Him at 3.
I put him top five.
I definitely had people. Sure. He was definitely in several of our voting panels top five. And I feel like someone had him almost high as like three or four. He was way up there, which mitigated because he's actually a little bit lower in my rankings. Just because, again, he doesn't have that top five win. But if you're asking me, would I pick him to beat like so many names in the top 10? Yeah, I probably would. But I'm always looking like who they beat yet. So kind of like Casey said, he's just stuck in this position where we all know he's a top five guy. He's clearly a top five guy. Which top five, top six, top seven guy is going to accept this fight after this? Especially if he runs through Moises.
He said it's
just going to be even more difficult, you know?
And he says the right things. Like, I think UFC 260 in his post-fight press conference, I think that was Ngannou Stipe. He called out Tony Ferguson because he wanted to close the – he wanted to, like, Habib and Tony never fought, and he wanted to finally put an end to that. He says the right things. He should be fighting Dan Hooker right now, but Dan Hooker said 1,000 times he has no interest in it, unfortunately. But such is life.
I do like the RDA fight, and hopefully, I think that's the one you go back to if he goes out there and does the damn thing. So now we got...
What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prop G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special three-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the Future of Entrepreneurship, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prop G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Co-main event, Miesha Tate is back. First time since UFC 205 that lost to Raquel Pennington. She walked away. She sort of stayed in the MMA space, took an executive role with ONE Championship, did some color commentary for different promotions along the way, but she is back to bid a farewell and adieu to Marion Renault, who will make the walk to the octagon for the final time. So, AK, let me start with you. What questions do you have here about Miesha Tate? Like, what's the one question you really need to have answered?
Man, so I mean, can she still pull the trigger? I mean, can she? One of the reasons she retired was, I think everyone, a lot of people saw the Raquel Pennington fight, UFC 205. There was some, you know, that audio in the middle of the fight where she was telling, I think she was still with Brian Caraway at the time, and she was telling him, like, it's just not, you know, not tonight. I just don't have it tonight, you know? And so when she retired, to like, it came as a surprise to no one. Now it's pretty easy to project that she is in a better place now. She's become a mother, two times over. She has two children. She got to see the other side of the business. She went to go work as an executive for ONE Championship. She really got to explore life beyond just the training side of it, just the fighting side of it, the promotional side. And I think that's going to be huge for her. But at the same time, this is someone coming off a nearly 5-year layoff, hasn't fought since November 2016. So my most optimistic projection is I think she's going to look great. But that is honestly a pure guess. Because we know that athletes can look great in training, they can look great in the lead up to a fight, but she hasn't actually been in that fight scenario in almost 5 years. So when you step in that cage, and it's going to be a very weird environment, no fans. You know, this is a UFC Apex or limited, whoever they allow at the Apex, but essentially no fans. Can she get that motivation without that charge of a live crowd? She's a fan favorite. You know, she always has the crowd behind her. There's no crowd this time. It's a very a sterile environment. So big questions ahead of, and she has a tough opponent who, yes, is on a losing streak, but is a veteran, is ranked, I guess, in the UFC rankings. And it's certainly not a walkover. I think it's the right opponent, but it's certainly not a cakewalk. So tons of questions surrounding the co-main event.
Jose, listen, we talk about MMA, quote-unquote, retirements all the time, and a lot of them don't stick, but are you surprised that we're about to watch a Miesha Tate fight after UFC 205 and her walking away and her going to ONE and all that? Like, did you ever think we'd see a day where Miesha Tate would say, you know what, let's do this again and let's try to make another run at this thing?
I'm a little surprised it's in the UFC. If anything, I thought she would, you know, return to one championship or maybe go to like Invicta or PFL or whatever. I'm not surprised she's back. Maybe she wanted to compete for like show her kids that she could compete. Like maybe they're at an age where they can actually like acknowledge that their mom is a high level athlete. That I don't know. But I'm surprised she's back in the UFC, but cool. Another high level bantamweight challenger that we've been talking a lot about how Amanda Nunes is running out of opponents. And yeah, she just tore through Misha Tate. But I want to see if, depending on how Misha Tate looks on Saturday, I wouldn't hate seeing that rematch again. Like just, I know it's not fresh blood, but 5 years is a long time between fights. I mean, what was it, like 7 years or something crazy like that between Connor and Dustin? And that was completely different turnout too. So I'm excited. Will she win? Don't know, but I'm excited to see how she looks.
Casey, AK sort of touched on it, and I want to get your take on this because, and I think you were there for the Eric Nixick interview. I'm pretty sure you produced that.
Yeah.
But Eric, I asked him about Misha, and he said that the biggest thing about her return that gets him excited was the fact that she stuck around in the space. Mentally, she got to see the sport evolve, and she got to watch it with her own eyes, and she understood it. So while the physical side of her wasn't quite there when she got back, the mental capacity when it comes to MMA was there because she'd been there the entire time. Do you agree with that? And you know, how much do you think that helps her heading into this return after nearly 5 years out of the cage?
I'm going to take Nick Zick's word and, you know, believe him that she didn't mentally leave MMA. I'm super excited about her return. She hasn't aged out of the sport. She's only 34. She retired relatively young. And let's not forget when she fought Amanda Nunes, I think, I don't want to throw her nutritionist under the bus.
She was on keto.
Yeah, she was on a pretty bad MMA bro type of diet. And she had a horrible weight cut. And if you remember, she almost didn't even make the cut for the weigh-in. Yeah. Like that fight almost got canceled. So Amanda Nunes clearly is, you know, the best bantamweight in the world right now, but I think if they ran it back, you know, 100 times, Amanda doesn't dominate that easily, I guess. I'm excited about her coming back, and I never thought Misha Tate retired. I think she just needed an extended break, and because people forget, I mean, Misha's been doing this since, like, she's a veteran, even though she's only 34. I feel like she's been in this for like as long as any other woman in the sport. She was fighting, you know, shoot and hook tournaments way pre-Invicta.
Hook and shoot.
Yeah, sorry, hook and shoot. She was doing those tournaments way back before, you know, there was any televised women's MMA. So she got thrown into the limelight, you know, and she didn't. And unfortunately, she was always in Ronda's shadow, and you know, she was in a very bad relationship. And you know, I'm happy for her. You know, I think, you know, her and Brian Caraway, you know, split up. So she seems to be in a better place, I'm hoping. So I hope we see just a mentally just focused and inspired Misha Tate, and not just someone, you know, going in there for a paycheck. Because I think she, you know, probably financially she was doing okay. I don't really think this is a paycheck type fight. And that's why I think she is back in the UFC. Because I'm sure Bellator, I'm sure some other promotions overseas or PFL could have offered more money. But I really, this is one of the few times I think she's actually doing it for the competition, and she loves the sport, so that's good.
I think it's perfect matchmaking. This is
perfect matchmaking.
I agree.
Well, Marion, yes, this is Marion's last fight ever, right? Like, she's retiring, win or lose.
That's what she is. Yeah.
She is 44 years old. That's amazing.
She's the oldest active fighter in the UFC right now.
That's incredible.
Her first pro fight, hook and shoot, November of 2007, lost to Caitlin Young.
No, I thought that was two fights in one card, right? On one night?
Yeah, she beat Jan Finney. She beat Jan Finney too, but she lost to Caitlin Young that night.
Right, yeah. And then wasn't her third knockout. Wasn't she on the card, and I don't remember if this was her next fight or like it was one of her first five fights. She fought on the card on the first time Gilbert Melendez fought Josh Thompson. Like that was the first matchup, and they fought four times, didn't they?
That was the main event of Strikeforce Melendez versus Thompson in June of 2008 from the HP Pavilion in San Jose, California. That's crazy. Wow, going back, I got to go back and watch some of those cards.
I actually thought Misha, when I looked at, I was looking at topology and their ages, I thought Misha was a lot older, to be honest. She's only 34.
Yep.
I honestly, for as long as she's been in the sport, so that was, that's just, that's pretty wild.
Chris Carrioso fought on the card. Brian Caraway also fought on that card. How about that?
Yeah, I think Misha even said it herself. Like, she was just burnt out.
Yeah.
She was tired of the whole process. Like, after she lost to Ronda, she was fighting like three times a year. Like, just took to claw her way back up. I just think she got burnt out completely.
Yeah. The run just to get to the title. I think she had four wins in like 14 months before she got the title shot against Holm, which wasn't that long after the Jessica I win. So, yeah, she was super duper active.
And I just,
anybody picking?
I just think it's really, just really important to highlight too, Tate. Like, she was fighting in like in parking lots. Like, when people like Ronda or even, I don't know, any other fighters, any other, the newer female fighters, they had someone to look up to. You know, they had like, oh, I can be Ronda, I can be Joanna, I can, you know, I can be this star. When Misha came into this, there was no star. You know, it was just like, oh, let's do this and, you know, hope my opponent shows up and maybe I'll get $500. So I completely understand what a, now there's some space away from her retirement, like just what a mental overload that must have been. It's just a pressure, especially always being in the shadow of Ronda too, you know, so to come from nowhere. And then when you finally succeed, then you have this other woman named Ronda Rousey, just kind of just berating you, and you know how it was just bad. Just the back and forth. And so I'm happy. I'm just excited. I hope Misha is happy. I'm hoping it's a good fight. You know, so I'm excited about it.
She is a true pioneer. I mean, we throw around the board pioneer a lot, but I mean, it'd be like her, Sarah Kaufman, Roxanne Modafferi, Julie Kidzey. I'm leaving a lot of people out, I'm sure, but she's definitely in there. And you're totally right for her life to just have been consumed for like over a decade. You know what I mean? I guess it said 2007. So almost the entirety of a decade, but probably felt like two decades for her. That's why I think it was so, like, when she came out of retirement, one, it wasn't super surprising. And two, maybe I'm just speaking for myself here. I don't think all of us had the usual reaction of like, oh, hashtag MMA retirement. And, you know, she shouldn't be coming back. Again, at least for me, and I touched upon it before, there was this thought that she had kind of, I thought she kind of rounded out her life. You know, she had found a purpose beyond Misha Tate the Fighter, which again, is all she probably had been from 2007 to 2016. And as great as that was, you know, I'm sure she enjoyed much of the ride as well. To just be that one thing in such an intense profession for so long. Yes, I mean, I can't even imagine. I can't imagine the kind of mental toll that takes on you. So for her to go away and start this whole other life and then decide, you know what, though? I'm 34 years young. I can still compete. I still want to compete. Let's do it. Let's give it one more shot before it's a few years down the road. And I just don't have that option anymore. So I couldn't be more like positive about wanting to see her fight again, regardless of what happens on Saturday.
Yep. Perfect matchmaking. Like we said, it's just about the fight. Marion Renault is not a big trash talker. She knows what's at stake. She knows that this is her last fight. I think it's just absolutely perfect. So, let me look at the betting line real quick for that one. It's definitely closer than the main event. Misha Tate -145 favorite. The comeback on Marion Renault +125. So line probably perfectly in my eyes. Anybody picking the upset in Marion Renault riding off into retirement with a big win over Misha Tate?
Sure.
I'm not.
I'll be the guy.
No. I'm not, but I'm telling something. I think she's going to hurt Misha at some point in the fight. She's going to hurt Misha, like crack her with a good shot. And that might be a good thing. Maybe that'll wake Misha up, but it might be in the first round, maybe in the second round. I do think Marion Renault is really tough. She's never been finished. I think a lot of people are kind of just wanting to see Misha get in there, maybe see a lot of the old Misha get in there and like hurt, you know, brawl a little bit, get a submission. I don't think that's going to happen with Marion Renault. This is probably going to go the distance. And in some ways, that's a good thing.
I think it's a good
thing. The matchmakers probably thought about that. Let's, you know, 15 minutes, get the whatever, quote unquote, ring rust off, if you believe in that sort of thing. But she's going to be tested. I do think Renault's going to crack her with like a good one at some point and like legitimately like rock her. And we're going to be concerned for a moment.
And who is Marion a loss to? Like Holly Holm, Raquel Pennington, like Kat Zingano. Did she lose to Yana or did she beat Yana?
She lost to Yana.
then she beat Sarah McMahon, and then like Macy Chazon, who was essentially a featherweight, and she's not been finished. And then doesn't she have a win over like Jessica Andrade too? Like,
yep,
not fighting Plums, and like a draw against Betch Gohea, the GOAT.
Yeah, so it's very tough.
Tough woman.
Split decision loss to Ashley Evan Smith, a fight that a lot of people thought Mariner No. won, and her only other loss before that in 2012, Julia Avila on the regional scene. How about that? Rest of the main card, we got Matush Gamrot versus Jeremy Stevens at 155 pounds.
Mm. No shove.
Favorite. Yes, no shove. Hands behind the back. I thought Jeremy Stevens.
It's
didn't really like his comments regarding the direct car close thing, but that's neither here nor there. The return of Rodolfo Vieira taking on Dustin Stoltzfus. That should be a lot of fun. And then the main card opens with an absolute banger. Billy Q versus Gabriel Benitez. That is a lot of fun. So some good fights. I believe the prelims start at 7 p.m. Eastern. Wire to Wire on ESPN Plus, and the main card starts at 10 p.m. Eastern. Of course it does, coming off of a crazy pay-per-view event. So what are the peeps saying? We'll take some questions, some thoughts, some comments from the peeps.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Right. I'm so excited for Gamrot to return.
I know. It's a great, again, perfect matchmaking.
Rodolfo. I got to see how Rodolfo does.
All right.
Rodolfo on the wrong end of my submission of the year so far. If Miesha Tate wins tomorrow, one would think she's one fight away from a title shot. Who would her next opponent be? Would you throw in there with Irene Aldana, AK?
Irene.
One away, man. It's true. The thing is, 135 is such a thin division. Like when I was reading that question, and I was like, no, she's not one away. But I'm just trying to think. Like we said, Irene Aldana certainly ahead of her. Juliana Pena. We know her pal is fighting next. GDR got booked. Or GDR is fighting. Who's GDR fighting?
Nobody.
Nobody.
She got booked? Did she get booked?
I thought she was. Am I crazy?
No, she was hurt. She was injured. She had surgery and stuff, so she's out for a little bit.
It's a good thing I don't do a show about like matchmaking and future matchups because otherwise this would be really embarrassing.
Embarrassing. There's two answers. Miesha Tate already said if they both won that she was going to fight Yana next, but now that Yana lost to Irene, she's going to have to fight Irene or just make the Holly Holm rematch. I don't particularly care either way. Both those fights rule, but if we're basing it off of Miesha Tate's MMA math, she was already eyeing Yana because I think they had been like tied together at some point. Just give her the woman that just beat her unless the UFC makes her move up to featherweight.
I like the Holly Holm idea. Like, I want to see Holm and GDR fight again because I think they owe us another fight after the UFC 208 debacle. But I'm kind of kidding. But I don't know. What do you think, Casey? I feel like the Miesha Tate title win over Holly Holm is one of the more unheralded fights, like title fights for sure in UFC history. Like, it's not talked about as some of the more exciting MMA. I mean, I know it was on a Conor card, but I mean, God, that submission win in the fifth round was, I'll never forget that.
She was down, I think, 3-1. She was on her way to losing that fight. It was an incredible fight. It was incredible. It was a big upset. Go back to the question. If Tate wins, Tate Holm to me is the fight to make. And hopefully they can give that Diaz type of push where they give it 5 rounds if it's a co-main event on a pay-per-view or something like that. Or I want to be in front of fans. That's the only reason I want to be on a pay-per-view. That's the reason. Otherwise, if it's Tate versus Holm too, but I want it five rounds. I don't want Misha to face Aldana next, mostly because I feel Aldana is most likely next for the title shot. And I just hate when the UFC continues to put, in such a thin division, to continue to put number one contenders potentially get knocked out from a title fight. And if Tate wins tomorrow and she beats Holly, heck yeah, no, title shot's next. But there's a lot of ifs. So yeah.
Yeah, I think the weight miss kind of hurts Aldana in this conversation. Because, mm-hmm. I mean, it wasn't just she didn't miss weight by a half pound. She missed weight by a lot. And
lady problems. I think that kind of lady problems. She has some lady problems.
I can't understand that. But I think will end up happening for Aldana is she'll fight the winner of Aspen Ladd versus Macy Chiasson and then, mm-hmm. you know, make the weight and then you go from there. But we'll see. 135.
Remember when
not
Misha,
a lot of star power, but some interesting options.
Yeah.
Remember when Misha talked about going to flyweight for a bit? Remember that was, she kept talking about that.
That was a while ago. Yeah.
Yeah. But then she like did the keto diet and realized that she couldn't cut weight on it. She's like, I'm 135 now. But like, if she wants to go to 125, I wouldn't hate her versus Valentina either.
Sheesh.
Wow.
Something you don't really think about that often.
No.
But you got to win tomorrow. That's win tomorrow. And if she doesn't win tomorrow, then none of this matters. So
yeah, Matt,
she looks good on the scale.
Slow down.
135 on the nose. Championship weight for
yes,
Misha Tate. She looked tremendous on the scale. Thank you, Matt. What else we got?
Slow comment.
There you go, Jose.
He sold
salesmanship. Pay the man.
He sold it. Dana White, you're welcome.
There are some like when I was on Fight Island for a while, you can tell when certain, like if a Brazilian media member or like a UK media member's there, like they'll always build up their fighters. Some of the Russian media on Fight Island it was just different. Like they were like Islam could be the champion right now, and they just sold the hell out of me on Islam, and it just felt different than like various other like reporters talking up their own fighters. Like they were like he has no. His path is going to be the hardest to get to, but once he gets that belt, he's not going to let it go. So I'm very, very curious how Islam looks in his first main event.
You know, it's interesting. The person that Islam lost to, Adriana Martinez.
Yeah. Yeah.
The guy never won again after that.
No.
Yeah. Right. That's how, that's how MMA is.
He got a decent lightweight, big upset victory. He never won again in his career. Mm-hmm. Just funny.
That's MMA.
That's the guy that Cowboy decapitated.
Yeah.
And then Guram called out, offered to fight Islam on 5 days' notice, which made me a big fan of that guy, too.
Is this true? I didn't hear about this.
I haven't heard that, but I think they should be fighting right now anyway. But Dan Hooker, I think, was one of the guys holding out for the Nate Diaz fight. Because like when RDA fell out, Islam called out Dan Hooker. And that he was like this was the first Fight Island, like that 5 week Fight Island where they had five cards in 5 weeks all on Abu Dhabi. Cause I think Islam was either the co-main or the main, it was one of the main events in December or whatever for the Habib card. And then Dan Hooker was doing his podcast and he's like, no chance in hell, this and that. And then he goes, but Nate Diaz fight you on 5 days' notice. It was like as like a joke. Obviously, didn't work out. That was also when Nate Diaz was tweeting about Dan Hooker. So maybe there was an actual possibility there. Not sure.
I'm trying to think who has Dan Hooker fought that's similar to Islam. And I mean, obviously, Gilbert, there aren't a lot of guys that are similar to Islam.
Gilbert Burns, maybe.
Yeah. But I think Gilbert's quite a bit smaller than. Dan Hooker. I guess a lot of people.
I mean, everyone at 155 is going to be smaller.
This is true. I don't know. Because the question is asking how would the matchup go? I mean, I think most of us would favor Islam. But I mean, the counter to that is also, you know, again, what we keep saying, Islam hasn't fought anyone quite at that level, like that definite top 10 guy yet. So that's what makes the Dan Hooker matchup so intriguing. It's like the perfect test for him. And you almost wish he was fighting Dan Hooker.
What was Dober ranked when they fought?
Dober was ranked like 14.
He was in there. He was ranked.
He just kind of busted. He just kind of got into the 15 rankings. But I think it was just Islam's domination over Dober.
Mm-hmm.
That was, even though Dober wasn't that ranked, it's just like his whoa, that guy Islam's clearly better than a very, very good Drew Dober. I think that was still, that was it. 15 minutes. Did he survive or did he get finished?
No, he got finished.
He finished.
Okay, well,
finished him.
Didn't even break a sweat.
Because if you watch, that's exactly why we feel so high on Islam. Yeah.
No, yeah, I do think Dan Hooker is a notch above Drew Dober, but if he, and that's why it's such a, like, again, it feels like they have such a logical way to build him up. You just hope that they do go down that path and that someone like a Dan Hooker does accept to fight him. But again, it's all up in the air.
All right.
Dan Hooker told our friends at Submission Radio that the only reason the fight didn't get put together between Hooker and Makhachev was Hooker wanted to fight on that June pay-per-view card that Volkanovski was supposed to fight on. That was like part of it. But Makhachev wasn't going to be ready to go. So that's what happened there.
It's a timing thing.
That's why it didn't happen.
Well, so that the card in Phoenix.
Maybe, yeah, it was June. Maybe it was the May card. Maybe it was the May card. Maybe it was the Houston card.
Because Volkanovski was supposed to fight in March before he fell out.
Yeah. Yeah, and then they were going to try to make it for... Then Hooker wanted it for 263, which was the Adesanya card.
Yeah, they were training.
Which was the Adesanya card. Sense, yeah. And Islam and wasn't going to be ready until July.
Yeah. And Riddell was on that card, so it made a lot of sense.
So the problem with Hooker is a lot of it's scheduling because of the COVID travel restrictions and stuff. So in the quarantines, I don't think any of us or anyone should ever imply that Hooker is avoiding Islam in that sense. I think it's just timing and training and COVID, all that stuff. So
yeah. Now, if Makhachev goes out there and does work here and then is ready to turn around and fight in September, I think Dan Hooker would probably fight in September since Volkanovski's fighting on that card. So
That main card would be bananas.
It'd be so good.
Okay. I got a question.
Yeah, we'll see.
This one's for Jose.
Dude, I love Mateus Gamrot so much. He is so talented. He is like, I think he just laid an egg in his UFC debut against Guram, but for all we know, Guram is like,
I think Guram's really good.
Future. So do I. Like, I just think, I can't remember who was supposed to fight, but like, Guram took that on like a last minute changeup, right?
Mustafayev.
Yeah. And Guram is like is the main training partner for Khamzat Chimaev, who's about to fight Leon Edwards for like a title shot. And then we all saw like when Marlon fought Rafael dos Anjos in his first fight, like we all know Marlon was way better than he showed in his UFC debut. And then they rematched and he just tore through him. So I think it was a weird introduction for UFC fans for Mateus Gamrot, champ from KSW. If Casey, you were there, if you remember when we interviewed Martin Lewandowski, we were talking about like you and I made it a point to ask him about Mateus Gamrot's future before he was in the UFC. So for a long time, I thought he was the best light. It was like him and Chandler were like the two best lightweights, not in the UFC. And I wanted and now we have both of them in the UFC. Obviously he's not going to get the Michael Chandler treatment, if he gets past Jeremy Stephens, I'm like the sky's the limit for him moving forward.
Great matchmaking by the UFC, by the way.
Fantastic matchmaking.
Tremendous. Perfect matchmaking because Jeremy's still got a name, even though he's on a losing streak. Jeremy still has that sort of danger behind him. And to see what Mateus Gamrot did to Scott Holtzman was super eye-opening because normally he's the guy who just takes you down and just beats you up for however long the fight is and just makes it miserable for you. But seeing how improved his striking is getting and he's got power to finish fights with the strikes, that's a scary thing, man. That's a very scary thing to see. Yeah. If you're a 155er and you're seeing Gamrot go out there and starting to drop dudes with punches, that's a scary thing.
I've said this after his first fight, the only reason he's not getting if he was in light heavyweight or flyweight, he would get the same treatment as Manel Cape or Jiří Procházka. Jiří wins like two in a row violently, and he's already in title contention. And Manel Cape was a backup for the flyweight fight before he even had a fight in the UFC. And then he had two back-to-back like top 10 flyweights. Lightweight is just so stacked. And I think Michael Chandler was such an anomaly. And he's like so popular amongst the US fan base that he's in the anomaly, but any other like shallow weight class Gamrot could be fast tracked to a title shot.
Great.
And this is how you do it. You fight guys like Jeremy Stephens. And
awesome match.
Do you think, do you guys think if Gamrot just smokes Stephens, do you think this is finally maybe the end for Stephens in the UFC?
No.
No, never.
Jeremy Stephens can lose 15 fights in a row, and Dana White will think he's just such a savage that he can't possibly release him.
The only thing I would say is if it's not a, like, I know it's inevitably Dana White's call for a lot of these things, but like if Hunter Campbell's like he just makes too much money and he's not winning, then maybe, because like we've seen Overeem and JDS and everyone get released, and we've seen like Amari Akhmedov or however you pronounce his last name released. So maybe, but I'm not. It's like a 1% chance, maybe.
All non-Americans, eh? All non-Americans.
Yeah.
My prediction, Conor comes back, loses to Dustin Poirier about 12 more times. Then we finally get McGregor versus Jeremy Stephens.
Yeah. Who the F is that guy matchup? Yeah. Finally resolved.
Makes sense.
Well, I think what they would end up doing is they'd be like, Jeremy, you either fight your car close or you're gone. And then he'll have to say yes.
At some point, yeah.
Jeremy Stephens is like last... 3 years have just been a murderer's row.
True.
Like all top three fighters.
And that's exactly why he is in the UFC, because the matchmakers know that he's an exciting fighter who will he'll win exciting and he'll lose exciting. And so he'll push, so the other guy, you know, gets to push. So he's great for matchmakers. You know, and
100%.
Yeah.
It's true. He should have a job. He should have a job.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. So I keep forgetting, because Stevens has been booked a few times, that the last time we saw him fight was the Cater fight last year.
Yep.
And that was a
gnarly. He made Cater look amazing.
He also missed weight very badly.
Yes. Has the Holloway fight been rescheduled? No, it has not been rescheduled. From what Holloway said during the fight week last week, doing numerous interviews and doing media days and stuff like that, is that he didn't really feel that injured. Just when you go through your medical checks, something popped up, some sort of sprain or fracture or something that was flagged, and they're like, nope, you can't fight. So he's working through stuff with the UFC, and we'll see what happens. Because remember, he also said that he was going to be the backup for, he was the original backup for Poirier versus McGregor. So he would already be in Vegas. If something happened, he got put on there. So with a guy like Holloway, you could go a lot of different ways. Hell, I mean, they might keep him to be the backup for Volkanovski versus Ortega if needed. So it has not been rescheduled. There's no word if it will be rescheduled. We'll see what happens. It's just one of those things where the UFC is just...
There's no timetable.
Just fast moving.
Holloway, right? Is he given a timetable yet?
No.
No. Man,
it is what it is. That's what he said.
Exactly. Yeah, it didn't seem like a serious injury, so it's just probably something that's
Max and his team specifically take his medicals super serious. Like, remember when he lost in Edmonton and we were at there, everyone's asking, or when he won in Edmonton and everyone was asking him about Volkanovski? He's like, I gotta go take tests before I can think about another fight. And then we can talk about it.
I had a lot of respect for Max Holloway. I already did, but after he beat Frankie Edgar, you know, it was like a workmanlike performance. I think it was 5 rounds. And then basically he admitted afterward, why didn't you go for the kill? He's like, I didn't want to get, if I throw harder punches, that's more of a chance I get hit back harder too. So I knew I was winning the fight. I don't want to get hit in the head too many times. You know, I have kids, I have a family. And Max Holloway's thinking about his future. So, you know, so him pulling out of this fight due to injury, I'm hoping it's just, you know, a light sprain on his ankle, you know, and he knows he has to be 100% if you're going to fight Yair Rodriguez. I'm hoping it has nothing to do with, you know, when Max had to pull out of that fight versus Ortega. Was it Ortega? What was the fight he had to pull out?
Before Frankie, yeah.
I hope it's nothing crazy like that. Max Holloway's been in a lot of wars, and so let's just hope it's just a sprain. He's back, and
why can't he fight with a sprain, Casey? We just saw a high level fighter enter the octagon with fractures up and down his legs. He's got the medical proof. He showed the medical proof today, Conor McGregor. My gosh, he had the fracture. And you're saying and Max Holloway is taking his health seriously? Listen, that's why there's the McGregors of the world and there's the Max Holloways of the world. Real talk.
It is
real talk. I'll take a couple more. A couple more. Hey, Cage, you ever figure out where Jed was? I know the answer to this question, but
Well, Scott, I mean, again, this came up on BTL, and the problem with the question you're asking now is you're assuming that I already said I don't care. So the first question you should have asked is, do I care where Jet is? The answer is still no. So I think that should answer the question that you did pose. So
the real question is, moving on, what else?
Jed, for some reason, Jed has gotten over amongst the BTL audience.
It took a while.
Him not being there. I knew it would happen. That's why he's such a mainstay on the show. Because,
hey,
I mean, he invokes emotion.
You take a giant spitball and you throw it against the wall enough times, eventually it sticks. Yeah. Okay,
that's right.
That's how I'm going to compare that.
That is. Wow.
Jed,
so you throw enough things at a wall, eventually something will stick to it, and then you say, "Look, I told you." And then, meanwhile, you have like this pile of trash on the floor that just never worked out,
festering.
I think I saw best prelim fight of the weekend. We'll keep it simple. Best prelim fight of this card.
I think it's one of those fights where I'm really interested in one fighter in every single card, in every single fight, but not the actual matchup. Lemos Ruiz fight,
yeah,
or Conejo, I think is the one I'm most interested in terms of both women, but like I'm always going to watch Daniel Rodriguez fight. Miles Johns is super exciting. Khalid Taha is super exciting. And then Francisco Figueiredo, brother of former champ Davidson, is really exciting. And then Alan, how do you pronounce his last name?
I say Badeau.
Like,
I don't,
fun fights,
I don't know if that's accurate.
Nothing that I'm overly excited about for the actual matchup.
I think the Taha Morozov matchup is really good. Taha's been pretty inconsistent, but I do think he's talented. And Morozov, I'm super high on him. I don't know if I'm quite like Gamrot fanboy level high as Jose is with Gamrot, but I think Morozov, I remember when he fought Umar Nurmagomedov. I was like, I thought it was a much closer fight than people thought it was going to be. And don't get me wrong, Umar styled that, but Umar looked amazing. He's super legit. But I think Morozov had his moments too. And I think before, if you watch any of his stuff before the UFC, he's a really, really, really good bantamweight prospect. So I would, if I had to pick a fight where I'm excited to see what both guys can do, I do think the 135 matchup between Taha and Morozov would be my favorite fight.
The Russian media on Fight Island said Umar's the best. Is the most talented of that entire crew. Wow. Like, he is by far they say he's more talented than Islam and Habib. So they think he has the biggest future. And Habib, if you watch his interviews, people have been asking like, oh, what would happen if Habib fought Petr Yan, like a Russian versus a Russian? And he goes, and Habib's like, Umar's had two fights. Like, settle down, bro.
His stand-up is insane. It's so exciting. Like, it's so fun to watch.
I'm super excited to see Amanda Lemos and Montserrat. Montserrat, as far as a promoter, she's got the look. You know, she just, like, she's someone if I start walking on the street, I'm like, who the hell is that lady? I want to know her story. You know?
that lady gets in fist fights for a living, for sure. Yep.
What? That lady's a cage fighter? I am shocked. So
she came in.
Yeah, and I thought she looked great in her. She fought once in UFC or twice? She fought once.
Oh,
the Baez fight. Yeah, I thought she looked great. Her run in Invicta was great, but Amanda Lemos, holy moly, I was not a believer in her. But she was originally a 35er, correct? And yep. I just looked at my Tapology page, and her three strawweight fights, I picked against her every time. So I'm 0-3 in her pick.
Right.
But when the way she beat Mizuki Inoue and Livia Souza, I think both those women they have the potential to be top 10 strawweights. They just don't have the they just not, but I feel like they had the potential to be. And then Amanda Lemos just walked through them. So I am super excited about her. And I think if Amanda Lemos dominates the way I think she will tomorrow night, I think we have a future title contender with her. So excited about that fight.
Yep. I think she's legit. She's the real deal. One more.
Ruiz also has a fantastic combination of terrible tattoos and fantastic tattoos.
Yeah.
I already responded to this. Right. In the chat.
Nerds and virgins. There's four of us. Come on. Jeez. Mm-hmm.
What shirt is Casey wearing?
Oh, it's
So I'm glad this was our last question.
Yeah. It's a Texas Chainsaw Massacre. It's the VHS cover, Japanese release of it.
Oh my god! Look at this guy. So
wow,
KP, you are so cool. Have I ever told you that? You are so cool, we'll say. Oh my gosh, hipsters! There's only one shirt. There's only one brand that I represent. Bam! This is the only shirt you need. This is the hippest shirt there is.
I think my Wade Boggs shirt is the best one.
Oh yeah, someone asked about that. What is your AK? Come on, this is a family show. What are you doing?
Yeah, we don't want to see that.
You're too close. AK, we don't want to see the MMA fighting logo we work for. We want to see a horror movie about a bunch of cannibals and an alcoholic racist baseball player instead. That's right. Am I right? Come on, guys. What are we talking about?
Yes. This is the Wade Boggs rookie card from 1983 on a t-shirt. Wade Boggs is my guy growing up. I had over 100 Wade Boggs baseball cards. Him and Ryan Sandberg of the Cubs were my two go-tos.
You picked one nice human being.
I have a Mark
Grace. I liked Wade Boggs as a kid too, and then I realized how he was in real life. I'm like, pass.
Never meet your heroes.
No, I'd never met the man. Right. He just opened his mouth and spoke.
Yes.
Never follow your heroes on Twitter.
Yes.
unless they're MMA fighters. These are the people you should. Nothing but heroes. Nothing but heroes. Unproblematic heroes in MMA.
That's right. We are done. We are out of here. We'll see you 6:30 tomorrow, Eastern time, for the People's Pre-Fight Show. We'll talk a little bit more about this, and we'll turn it over to you for 30 minutes. So, yes. You want to come in?
We got trouble.
Yeah, he's not dressed like Godzilla this time. Hey, buddy.
Yes, what's up, dog? Crazy mess up.
There you go. Godspeed. Move along.
Move along.
Move along. We're going to see Space Jam. We're going to see Space Jam 2 in a little while. So good night, everybody. We'll see you tomorrow.
Hey,
Space Jam sucks.
You're listening to the Vox Media Podcast Network.
What does it take to be an entrepreneur, and how is it changing in our ever-evolving business landscape? This is Scott Galloway, host of the Prop G Podcast and an entrepreneur myself. Right now, we've got a special three-part series running all about the future of entrepreneurship. We're answering your questions on work-life balance, how to raise capital for your business, and more. Because when you're an entrepreneur, it's always important to look ahead at what's to come. So tune in to the Future of Entrepreneurship, a Prop G Pod special sponsored by Mercury. You can find it on the Prop G Pod feed or wherever you get your podcasts.
Claude 3 from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point of the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skill and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model on the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who use Anthropic to navigate this new frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude, Claude, today. Jumpstart your genius with Claude 3 by Anthropic.